Hello and welcome back to a brand new episode of Scottish Football Covered. We've got another episode for you today, full of title parties and parting company with managers. We are going to go through the story of the season almost as it's drawn to a close. But before we get into any of this, we've got a bit of bad news to report. Archie, our beloved co-host, is taking the decision to step down from the podcast. Just get too much when he's put with university, and he felt it would be more beneficial to give the opportunity that he has to someone else. So I'm joined with Stefan and Finlay today. Stefan, what's your immediate reaction to the devastating news? Archie's left us.
I'm gutted. Archie always brought like a lot to the podcast. I loved his little analogies. He came up with like quick witted things to say, and brought a lot of insight to it. And I think he said on the first episode that, he's a Tottenham fan, he's an English football fan, and he just wanted to dive into Scottish football. And to be honest, he gave it everything he had. So, nah, listen, all the best to him. We know he's going to smash it, and he's just best of luck to him.
He's a great guy, and he was always taking ribbons on here with the Tottenham jibes and all that. Finlay, same thing to you. How are you, and how missed is Archie going to be?
Incredibly, he's such a nice person to have. You know what? I'm talking about like he's dead. He's going to be doing some incredible things in the future, I'm sure. I'm going to miss it as well, not least because Tottenham lost 5-1 at the weekend and I kind of had a whole script ready for him, but it wasn't to be. But I'm sure we'll hear from him again in the near future, if not on this podcast, just in general. It'll be nice to hear what he's up to.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll hear from him when Tottenham start winning again, if they ever do.
Long time.
Well, be sure you get in touch with us on Twitter at SFC Covered and join in the conversation. And if you think you're good enough to be one of our co-hosts, why don't you drop us a DM with your CV and that? But enough about that. We're going to get into covering the action and where else to start. But Tannadice, Dundee United 0, Celtic 5. The Glasgow side confirmed champions for the fourth consecutive season. An own goal from Ryan Strain before two goals from Nicholas Coon and Adam Ida each completed the rout. Finlay, I'm going to start with you. Look, if there's ever a way to win a championship, Celtic have just done it. Ida in his best form, Coon hitting form again. Perfect time to get it just before a massive derby next week.
Yeah, it was. I think there was that feeling that they were always going to turn up. I was a little bit surprised by Dundee United's performance, but to be fair, Celtic were so good that there wasn't really anything they could do. And I think they knew that as soon as the first goal, the first even two goals go in, they know pretty quickly that it's over for them. And you mentioned Coon. I had said earlier in the season, and I think it's completely a matter of opinion, that I thought Nicholas Coon had fallen off his usual high standards. I thought we saw the kind of best of Coon at his greatest. He is driving at players. He's got a lot of energy. And I thought after the Champions League, he'd looked a little bit off it. And I don't know what the reason for that was. I don't know. I don't think it's a case of having your head turned. I think maybe he probably just wanted to be in that competition so much that now it's almost as if he didn't know what to do with himself. But on the day, like all the best players do, he turned it on and he was absolutely fantastic, as was Celtic.
Yeah, no, that's a good point you make about Nicholas Coon. It's been a mental season, I would say. That's the best way to describe it. He'd never had the best of starts to his Celtic career. And then from the start of the season, from pre-season up to about Christmas, it was unbelievable. Even touted for the Germany squad. I'm sure Nagelsmann says he was on his radar. Maybe that pressure just gets to him, but you see me celebration how much that meant. This sort of wasn't quite cupping his ears, but it was just a signal that he was blotting out all the nonsense. Stefan, we're going to get into more about Celtic and their season expectations later on, but I'm going to go back to Dundee United. That's their heaviest defeat of this season, and it means they're 3 points behind both Hibs and Aberdeen, who we're going to get into as well. Do you think Dundee United could have done better, or was it just did they just catch Celtic at the wrong time, do you think?
I think it was one of those games that it was set up perfectly for Celtic. Going to Tannadice, it's not an easy place to go. They dropped points there in December. You look at the performance that Dundee United put in there in December, it was very dogged, it was defensive, it was robust. They really just forced Celtic and held them to that goal, to that draw. This time around, It's almost as if Celtic were just too quick. Every single pass was just that zip almost, where it just felt like Dundee United were maybe not a yard off it, but maybe half a yard off it. Weren't excuse me, weren't as quick to close down, weren't as quick to get in front of the ball and make those challenges that they did make in the December game. Obviously, they've still got third to fight for, so no one's going to sit here and say that Dundee United signed out and anything like that, because I don't think they did for the first wee while. It was an okay performance, but I think as soon as Celtic get the first, then the second, then the third, heads go down, the mindset changes, and it's almost like, okay, we're not going to win, we're not going to get a draw, so let's do some damage limitation. And ultimately, that's what they did, because as soon as the Celtic fifth goal went in, you're thinking, right, when's the sixth coming? You see James Forrest coming on to break that streak and almost stay like 16 consecutive seasons of scoring in the Scottish Premiership. The goal just never came. So, in essence, Dundee United did finish off probably better than most expected to them when the second half kicked off.
Just think it is quite frightening that this is the fifth and potentially could be the third best team in the country, and Celtic just ripped them apart with ease. It wasn't made entirely easy. I think the first half an hour before you said before Celtic got that first goal, it was just I think Sinisalo Salah made a couple of saves, but you just had there's an inevitability with Celtic sometimes, especially on days like this. As soon as they get the first goal, they're just going to go absolutely rampant. Finlay, we mentioned earlier, they've got that derby on Sunday. And then they're probably looking more ahead to the cup final against Aberdeen a week after the season finishes. Do you expect Celtic to complete the treble? Bear in mind, this is a Celtic side that's just lost Jota, but as we says, players are starting to find a bit more form now. Dyzamayda is probably going to have to play in the left-hand side, but you've got James Forrest back to full fitness. What's your predictions for Celtic trophy haul by the end of the season?
I see them winning that cup final quite comfortably. It feels anticlimactic. I really see like a 3-0 or a 4-0 just on their day. And I remember they showed this to Aberdeen after that 2-2 draw. I think that 2-2 draw is the kind of Celtic that we're going to see at the weekend against Rangers. But when it matters, when all the players start firing, I think they're going to do a lot of damage and should win that cup final comfortably. The question is, to lose three old firm derbies, even in a treble winning season, I know a lot of fans will say that doesn't impact them, but I don't know. I beg to differ. I feel like there will be an element of hurt and it will be a kind of stain. Not that that will be remembered in a season or two, but a kind of bragging rights will be used against them, and I don't think they'd be too pleased. But again, cup final, I think, should be quite comfortable for them.
No, it's interesting because I don't think, no, I'm pretty sure there's never been a season quite like this where if Rangers win on Sunday, they will have won three of the derbies and then somehow they're still like 15 points behind come the end of the season without a trophy. It would be an absolute complete anomaly. Stefan, would you, I don't want to use the word season defining, but if Celtic lose three derbies in a season, they win the treble. How is that ultimately going to be remembered? Because you've got to remember, this is a lot of people will say it's one of the worst Rangers sides we've seen since they've came back up through the divisions. So, would there be an element of worry going into next season? Because they're probably only going to get stronger, probably with a better manager, and probably with some better players.
I mean, it's a blemish on not only Brendan Rodgers' record, but if Celtic go on to win the treble that everyone thinks they will win, it's a blemish on that season. It's a little, black mark, almost maybe like an asterisk against it, because this Rangers team is, pound for pound, one of the worst Rangers teams I've seen since they re-entered the division, despite having decent players in Cherney and Butland to a degree. I think he's fallen off massively in the second half of the season, but still strong player. It wouldn't it wouldn't be looking great for Celtic or Brendan Rodgers going into next season, considering, with the financial takeover of the 49ers, possible investment from Red Bull, possible investment from elsewhere, new manager. Depends who it is, depends who they bring in, but for me, it wouldn't look great for Celtic as a club. And even Brendan Rodgers, I think, will probably know that he's been caught napping in the last three derbies. You look at the one against the Rangers at Celtic Park back in March, the game, Clermont's last derby against Celtic in January, and then even the cup final. It's almost as if, Rangers had the better of Celtic in all three of those games, and people can come to their own conclusions about it. But for a team we call Celtic mentality monsters coming up against Rangers in the last couple of games, it's not really felt that way. And going into next season, you want to lay a marker down on your rivals. You've became the champions. For me, the mentality would be walk into Ibrox, silence them, humble them. Would be my mindset as a Celtic player, but. I don't know. I feel like the edge has just came off the Celtic team a little bit. Despite that win, they've just not looked their usual selves in the last little while.
I think the last couple of weeks have started to click with the big semi-final win and the wins over Dunedin and Kilmarnock, and then people can say what they want about the game on Sunday, how if it's meaningless, what, it doesn't matter anything because the season's done. It will be massive, and the confidence going into next season for both Celtic and Rangers. If Celtic can, as you say, lay down a marker, that would be quite humbling of Rangers. And then obviously if Rangers can beat Celtic for the third time in one season, when a season they've not been well at all. It just goes to show you never know what's going to happen next season. But
It would be absurd, but I don't even think Rangers fans would class this as a successful season. I mean, I think that would annoy them even more. Like, how can we beat Celtic three times in a season and still end up 15 odd points behind? It's literally the sublime to the ridiculous of how that can possibly be a thing. But aye, it's a concern for both sides. I think it's a double concern.
no, absolutely. I think both is concerning, but for the completely different reasons. I completely get where you're coming from. Going to move on to Celtic's Cup final opponent, so that we mentioned Aberdeen. Huge, huge win in the race for third place. They beat Hibs 1-0. Kevin Nisbet scored 10 goals from time. It's Finlay, you've been to Hibs a lot this season at Easter Road. That was your first league defeat in 18. David Gray obviously just signed a new contract. Do you think that's going to maybe derail them the last part of the season? Because we've seen it, the curse of the, like, I don't want to say the interim manager bounce, because obviously David Gray has been permanent manager, but we've seen like a lot lately. Managers have these fantastic spells. David Gray just signed a new contract. Could this be the first moment where things start to go wrong? I'm going to say it quietly.
No, you're right to ask that because I've been thinking it towards the earlier parts of the season. But I think what I've seen, having watched Hibs, is that they've got a newfound strength. So that even if things start to go wrong, you remember they beat Celtic but then lost to them in the cup. And that could have been a moment where they fell apart, but they didn't. And they've had some draws. I think they drew with St Johnstone. That could have been a moment where things went wrong and it didn't. I think maybe they've established a new baseline. So even if things are going badly, they're never going to fall off in the way that they did or in the way that it happened to Aberdeen, which is good. They've got a base to work from now. Where I would say they need to work is the chance creation in that side has not been fantastic. In that game in particular, it looked like they had some chances, but zero shots on target, I think, tells you everything you need to know. And I know they lost because of a contender for the Puskas, but I didn't really think they were in it. And Aberdeen are a good side. I think we forget that because of the run that they went on. These two teams are fairly evenly matched, and I think the reverse leg could have gone, 1-0 towards Hibs. I think they're pretty even. The thing I would say about Hibs going into next season is, well, first they have to aim for Europe. That's the one thing. They will be fighting for third. I don't think they'll fall away, but there are just a couple of things that they need from that team, but there is a tactical identity that David Gray has. The use of the wing backs, Martin Boyle up front does a lot of work. They need to make sure that they have Triantis next season or someone like him, because the midfield is, it's a little bit, I would say it's their weakest area. And the Cadden twins are fantastic, especially Nicky Cadden. He's been one of my players of the season. They need to make sure that they have a suitable alternative, but at least you could see that a structure there, that five or that 3-5-2, that two wing backs. You know that there's something there. They just need to build on it. So I'm not too worried. I know I rambled there a little bit, but to answer your question, I'm not worried about Hibs. I think they've got a good foundation to work from.
I like what you said about Nicky Cadden. I think it's a shocking exclusion from the PFA Team of the Year. But then again, like, it's voted by the players, so who are we to argue? You know what I mean?
What do they know?
Exactly. What do
Nothing.
they know? We obviously know a lot better. Right, Finlay, you also mentioned about Kevin Nisbet and that strike. That's just sometimes you just need to hit them to win the game. I'm going to ask you both. He's obviously, it was against his former club, and it was 10 minutes ago. With the context of the game, you're right to celebrate. And though there was no muted celebration against his former club, I'll start with you, Finlay. What's your take on the whole debate about, like, when you score against your former employer? Like, do you think players are right to celebrate, or do you think they should, like, tone it down a wee bit?
I don't think they have to do anything, but I think maybe when you take it to account, it's a context thing. There's one in my mind. So first of all, Kevin Nisbet, he played for them for like 3 years. He was at their academy for like one. It's not like he's a boyhood fan or he was at that club for ages. So if you forget about the fact that he scored a fantastic goal. It's difficult to keep those emotions to yourself already. Scoring the winning goal, he probably will never score a goal like that. So I can understand to a certain extent. But if you guys can help me with this one, there was something where a player didn't celebrate, even though he'd been at the club. I feel like it was for just a year, or even he was at their academy. One of those where people just couldn't understand why. But yeah. I think if you want to celebrate, go for it. It's not like the Hibs fans are gonna go, oh, what a guy. He's just scored the winning goal, maybe cost us a place in the Europa League, but fair play.
The one I think you might be talking about, Andy Harley, they scored against Rangers in the
That's
cup.
the one. That's the
Yeah,
one.
that one I thought, I like it's his prerogative. But the one I thought was even weirder was Donnelly for Dundee scored against Celtic. He's never played for Celtic, and they'd done the hands up, never celebrated. I think he must be a Celtic fan. So.
It must be, but like, celebrate, show, like, that's how you get remembered by. If he wants to play for Celtic, I know maybe it's not on the cards, but at least fans will remember you. If you, they'll love that kind of character, even if you scored against them. I'm sure fans would take notice.
Then, Stefan, same question to you about the whole muted celebration, not celebrating against your former club. What's your take on it?
I love Kevin Nisbet's celebration. I don't see why he would have to not celebrate. Like, you're not employed by them. Like, for me, you owe them nothing. You played there for a couple of years. You did your time. You took your money, and you gave goals. He doesn't owe them anything. Like, I hate this. Like, gonna get me started in a tangent here. I just hate the fact everybody wants everything to be so nice and be so respectful. It's a sport. It's about being competitive. He scored a goal in a massive game, like a goal-defining game, maybe even a season-defining game. Nah, who cares? For me, I'd love it. I'd have preferred if he'd ran up and kissed the badge right in front of the Hibs fans. Like I would have loved it. So, nah, don't. I don't like it when players don't celebrate. David Turnbull, when he played against Motherwell for Celtic and he scored, and they never celebrated. I'm like, no, like just celebrate, like enjoy it. You don't owe them anything. Like, I get he's trying to be respectful, but nah, not for me. I love it. I'm all for it. Listen, I'm on the Simeone side of the game. I'm on the Jose Mourinho side of the game. I'm all for it. I love it. I want the toxicity. I don't want it to be nice. I just want it to be pure passion, elation. Like, just enjoy the game. Just, don't even make it any like a mad love fest. Nah, love it.
Stefan, wait, what can I ask? What do you make of people walking around the like club's badge on the floor?
I seen Rio Ferdinand do that for Madrid. See, if it's me, I'm getting as much dirt on my shoes as possible, and I'm walking across it. I don't care. It's a carpet. It's meant to be walked on. So now you want to put your I think it's more disrespectful to put a club's badge on the floor for people to walk over. I think that's disrespectful. So,
Aye, is that aye? Why do you put it there if it's not
aye,
to be walked in?
it's not as if it's, you know, it's sacred. Like, it's no, you've put it there. People are gonna dry that. I'd be there, muddy feet all over it. Just do it to annoy people. Why not? Funny.
We could have our own podcast episode, I think, Stefan's pet hates and football. I
We
don't know
could.
if you've ever, I'm digressing a wee bit, but have you ever saw the one Ander Herrera that he had? He just spits. It's just spits on the Man City badge. Yeah,
I
that's the way it should be.
love it, and I'm all for it. What was it? There was one, and Adebayor, like when he scored against, was it Arsenal he
Arsenal,
scored
yes.
against?
Arsenal.
And I loved it. Why not? Like, ran the full length of the field just to celebrate in front of there. I'm listen, shithousery, I'm all for it. It's okay with me. I don't know if you feel the same, Finlay, being a big gunner.
Listen, we're gonna win the Champions League anyway, so I'll let that go. But it's in hindsight, it's you want to see more of that. Although it's a funny one because Man City paid a lot of money. We would have wanted to keep him, but couldn't afford to. But yeah, listen, I forgive him. I forgive him.
Well, track is back to the Scottish football before we make a top 10 shithouse of the moments of all time.
We're going to do that.
Well, that could be a summer episode for further content. Kevin Nisbet's goal ultimately ended up proving to be the winner. It moves Aberdeen to 11 points with Hibs, but Hibs are fourth due to goal difference, which is acting as that essentially an effective point. Finlay, I'm going to just ask you an almost impossible question. Obviously, it was crucial for Aberdeen to avoid defeat because then Hibs would have just raced away in front of them. But overall, who do you think is going to finish third, bearing in mind Aberdeen and Hibs have both got to play Celtic and Rangers each?
I'm gonna go Hibs. Has it, who have I'll go to Stefan. I'm gonna come back to you. I want to have a look at that run again.
Well,
Okay.
Stefan, same question to you.
Gonna say Aberdeen, not just to combat what Finlay said. I'm gonna say Aberdeen because I think the run that they went on at the start of the season, if they can find that little bit of form, despite coming up against Celtic and Rangers, I still think they could do it. I would not be surprised. I think they'll beat Rangers at Ibrox. I'm going to put it out here right now. I think they'll beat Celtic at Pittodrie. So I don't see why not. I think they've got it in them. League's done for Celtic. Celtic are focusing on the treble. If I'm Brendan Rodgers, I'd start to put in some of the younger players, start to just give legs in their minutes in their legs. So for me, I think Aberdeen could finish that. I'm not going to put my house on it because it's Aberdeen, but I do think they could do it. Plus, a certain person that I might work with who might be an Aberdeen fan, I said I would be nice to them on the podcast, but. I
Bear in
digress.
mind, Hibs are 15 ahead on goal difference. So that could come back and bite them for Aberdeen. The other thing that you notice that you mentioned that I picked up on is Brendan Rodgers playing younger players with the games to go. League is wrapped up, only the cup final to play for. Would you be disappointed if we didn't see any academy players getting a good amount of game time in the last four games? And if they didn't, what would that say about the club in general?
I would be disappointed, right, but not to the level of some people on social media who have this big, massive gripe about not playing youth players, or playing enough Scottish talent. I would be disappointed because there's a few that I would like to see get a little bit of game time. But it is Brendan Rodgers and it's not something he ever really tends to do, but it would be nice to see.
I think as well, you said you think Aberdeen are going to beat Celtic at Pittodrie. The psychological impact that could have before the cup final, especially for Aberdeen, giving them some sort of confidence going into the cup final that maybe could change the magnitude of the game. But and then Barry Ferguson said in his post-match conference. Teams aren't scared to play Rangers home and away, and we're going to talk about Barry Ferguson's team right now. 2-2, they drew away to St Mirren, and talking about Barry Ferguson himself, his overall record, 4 wins, 3 draws, 4 losses. They haven't won since they came back to win 4-3 in Dundee. Stefan, I'll start with you. Ferguson said after this game, if he doesn't get the Rangers job, he's not going to manage again. And then we're going to get into Hearts. They just lost Neil Critchley. I thought before I heard this, Barry Ferguson would be a good appointment for a team at Hearts because the way he's set up the Rangers teams, they're better when they're the underdogs. I think he'd thrive in that sort of environment. What's your overall take on his stint as Rangers manager so far and his comments that if it's not the Rangers job, then he doesn't want any?
I get it. For him, the Rangers job is the pinnacle. It's the Mount Paektu for North Korean people. Like, it is literally the top thing you could ever want to go to or want to achieve. I get it. Why would you want to settle for a job you've got no interest in doing just because it's in the same field as the job you do want to do? Football player, great. And arguably a really great pundit. People can feel free to disagree. I've met Barry. He's a really good pundit. He knows he's got a job in the media to go back to. Does he need the pressure of managing a team like Hearts and, to manage some expectations, whether they be fair or false? For me, like, I totally understand why he wouldn't want to. I do think it would be a good appointment for Hearts. I would say that some of the performances that he has set his team up in. I mean, you look at the win against Fenerbahce away. He's had some really recognisable results, but I totally understand and I respect his decision because it must take a lot for him to come out and say that he's done in management if he doesn't get the Rangers job. Like, it's a big statement because. I live in a world where never say never. It's one of them. Like, if he's a man of his word, then he'll never do it. But if a dream opportunity came up, or not even a dream opportunity, but if a really good opportunity came up after Rangers, and he took it, you'd be a bit like, oh, well, do you mean what you say, or do you just talk for just to make headlines? So I don't know. It's a really interesting one.
It was also disappointing for him, and maybe some of the words he said came out as just emotion, or but I don't I genuinely believe what he's saying. But big result for his counterpart Stephen Robinson. And just before I get into that, Mark O'Hara scoring again against Celtic and Rangers. I think he's probably too old to make a step up, but apparently that's his 12th goal against Celtic and Rangers, and I don't think there's been a midfielder in the SPL era onwards. So that includes the SPFL that scored more against the Glasgow's Big Two. But I'm going to go back to Stephen Robinson before I talk about Mark O'Hara all day. Finlay, Rangers fans might not want to hear this. I don't think if you miss your big targets, I know they've been linked with Steven Gerrard, they've been linked with Jose Mourinho. If you told a Rangers fan they're going to get Stephen Robinson, they probably would come out with the pitchforks and the rioting gear. But maybe no Rangers, but I don't want to take him away from St Mirren because he's quite frankly adored there. Now there was a big tifo from the Panda Ultra Brigade. I don't know what they're called, but could Rangers do worse than look at Stephen Robinson? I'll let you decide.
If you think about the fact that they've got this money coming in from the US, I think they can do better. That's no disrespect to Stephen Robinson. He is a fantastic manager. I think sometimes managers find their club that fits them to a T. Stephen Robinson has done that with St Mirren. It's been an absolutely brilliant job to get them into the top six. 3 seasons in a row, they've got a stinking budget. That group of players is not exactly inspiring. He lost Alessania because they had to get some money. So he went to the US. Season's not done yet. They managed to get a fee for him, even though he was leaving for free in the summer. That is just, it's so impressive what he's done in the last few years. The playing style, I don't think it's that bad. I think there are clubs with a much less interesting playing style in the league. It's exciting. You're never short of drama in Paisley. And I would say, I don't know if they can go further. I don't think they could ever push higher up the table just because money won't allow. And the season is just too long for them. And the problem you get with players who aren't elite is they will put in a fantastic performance, like they will draw with Rangers or beat Rangers, or same with Celtic, but they can't follow it up the next week against a club of the same level, if not worse. And that's the problem that Stephen Robinson has with St Mirren. That's why he can't get them further up. And they're not going to get more money. Their club is just not going to spend more than it has unless they're getting that from players. So I think what the interesting thing is for Stephen Robinson is, in a way, this is the perfect club for him. But because he's got so much ambition, he's going to be incredibly frustrated by not being able to take them further. And the ability to balance ambition with knowing maybe that you're in the perfect place, it's going to be a conundrum for him. And there's going to be, I don't think he's a good fit for Rangers. I think Rangers have got a lot more money. They want to play a specific way. They can find good managers. I've heard that they've been linked with managers everywhere, like Kevin Muscat. They've been linked with the manager from Bodo Glimt, who's got a team from the Arctic Circle with about 14 people in it, the Europa League semi-finals. They've got names, but I think that doesn't take away from the fact that Stephen Robinson deserves a lot of recognition for what he's done. And I think if he did leave, St Mirren fans will not like to hear this, but the club might end up where St Johnstone are or in the Championship. That is my worry.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I think with aging squad, and then if he did leave, I think he's probably the glue keeping him into the top six. I do think it would be an underwhelming appointment for Rangers. It's no one's actually saying he's getting the Rangers job. This is just me suggesting it. I just think he's a guy who can constantly sells himself short because he's done a fantastic job at Motherwell, and then his next job is Morecambe. Like, with the greatest respect, they've just been relegated to the non-league in England. I think the next step for Stephen Robson, I don't, and I feel as if every week I come on this podcast and I'm saying, where's the next step for us? I don't want to keep moving people on, but I think if he's looking at it, if he wants to be ambitious, maybe a Hearts, who there's a vacancy there, a Hibs or an Aberdeen in the future, and then that would be the deciding factor whether he could make a step up. Because look, the job he done at St Mirren, top six for the first time in their history, and they've got it 3 times in a row, two cup back-to-back cup finals in Motherwell. He's a brilliant manager for this level, but we'll never know how far his ceiling is within Scottish football. We've seen other successful managers like Derek McInnes. His stock's kind of plummeted a little bit with this season we come on. But anyway, we're going to go back, talk about Rangers. Stefan, how does the rest of the season really look for Rangers? You know, they're fighting for bragging rights in this game against Celtic on Sunday. There's a lot riding on that, despite no competition. The other three games of there are essentially pre-season friendlies, and this is a tough job for Barry Ferguson. He's trying to get his name in the hat, but how is he going to motivate these players? Because it does not look like they play well when there's nothing worth playing for. They only seem to turn up in Europe and against Celtic, and then even after Nico Raskin scored, it looked like he was arguing with Hams Agyeman. So what does Barry Ferguson need to do for the remaining four games?
I think he just needs to see it out in as painless a fashion as possible, starting on Sunday by making sure that they beat Celtic and get them up for that. I mean, I don't think Barry needs to get it. I don't think any manager, despite what side of the old firm that they're on, or the Glasgow Derby, whatever you want to call it, it doesn't matter because you should be up for these games. It shouldn't take for a manager to get you up for it. You should naturally be up for it. But I think he'll just want to try and get to the end of the season as quick as possible and do alleviate any sort of damage that can be done to getting his name in that hat. I do firmly think his name is not in the hat. I think there are bigger names that are probably in the hat. I've seen Marco Rosa, his name's been touted. Obviously, the return of Steven Gerrard. I did see the Ketil Knutsen one from Bodo. It's been an interesting one because I actually, when Ange Postecoglou left Celtic, it's one I said to people. I was like, would Celtic fans take Ketil Knutsen? He's done a fantastic job at Bodo. He'd done a job over Celtic in the 2021-22 Conference League, when everyone expected Celtic to walk over Bodo. I think that should probably be an all right appointment for Rangers, but I think with the 49ers coming in, they want to go big and go home. So there are bigger names there. It's as I say, like, I don't think they've got like a leader. I know Tavernier, James Tavernier is their Hall of Fame captain, but for me, I just I've not seen any leadership throughout this season from Rangers, from their players. So it's going to be a long end to the season for them. They're most likely going to see Celtic lifting at least two, if not three, trophies. It's not going to be great, but I think most Rangers fans and Rangers players just want this season done as quickly and as painlessly as possible.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be an interesting summer ahead for Rangers. Outside shout for the manager, Daniel Farke. Maybe I know he just got promoted to Leeds, but there's been talk of him getting the sack, and then look, with the takeover deal, it wouldn't be the most unrealistic thing to do. But one team that will be in the market for a manager as well this summer is Hearts. They fell to another home defeat, 1-0 to Dundee, and that was the last we've seen of Neil Critchley. Finlay, you're at Tynecastle. Firstly, do you think it was the right decision to get rid of Neil Critchley? And secondly, what was the atmosphere in Tynecastle like? Because it seemed quite toxic at the end of the game against Motherwell at Firth Park. It must have been 10 times as bad in Tynecastle, no?
Oh my God, that atmosphere was rough. The Dundee fans were having the time of their life in the corner. They got shoved top right where I was sitting, top right corner, but they were loving it. And the Hearts fans were shouting. The thing I like about Tynecastle and why I think it would be one of the best stadiums when it's rocking is how close they are to the pitch. That was also the problem for the Hearts players. Because Neil Critchley could hear everything and they were complaining about every pass. And they were absolutely right. There is leeway given to managers who want to play a possessive style of football in that. And Benigni defended this. I asked him in the press conference about it. And he said that actually, a lot of fans don't really know. I think, in a way, he was like, fans don't really know all that much about football. They don't. What they were trying to do was poke holes, just probe for space. In a way, maybe there's a point that fans don't completely understand what is going on at all times, but they're not stupid and they can tell when a team is trying to find spaces because everyone's watched Barcelona, and they can tell when there's a watered down version of that. That is, and I spoke about this on the kind of lethal to languid scale, very much on the languid side. When nothing was going to happen and Dundee were never pulled out of shape. They were completely fine. And this is a team that conceded 71 goals this season. That is an outrageous number. That is, I think it was 13 more than St. Johnstone, who seemed to concede every other minute. So the goals were so easily found. Cabangu was a great striker. James Wilson wasn't available, but is a great striker. Shanklin wasn't available. But the options that they have in that squad, it's not like they're bereft of attacking talent. It was just the way they tried to go about it was poor, and the body language from the player, here come the body language experts that Stefan mentioned, players were running towards the ball, never away from the ball. And it just looked like he had an idea of how he wanted to play Critchley, and the players, they weren't sure they wanted, they started doing their own thing. The only player who really impressed me was James Penrice. There was just so much frustration from him. He was the player out on the left. He should have had a winger in front of him because every time he got the ball, he was one-on-one. So he can't pass down the channel down to the byline. He can't make that run himself because it's not really his game. It's not to take players one-on-one. And so he was calling for players and he was just wanting more out of his teammates. And this is a player who's in his first year since signing from Partick Thistle, and he's asking his kind of teammates for more. It was dispiriting for Hearts. This is, you can see that there are players there. There are good players, and they are actually, I think, technically better than Dundee. They should be in the top six. I just don't think Critchley was ever a good fit. And now the kind of football purists are going to come out and say, Jamestown analytics, it's bad, it doesn't work. But I think that's true. I think they got it wrong here. But that's not a reason to necessarily down tools. Just, critically, I don't think he ever convinced anyone, to be honest. And yeah, it was a shame because he seems like a nice guy. But yeah, good luck to him for the rest of his career.
Yeah, I think there was question marks over him since he got in. I did think immediately get that new manager bounce, but ultimately it's not worked out for him. You mentioned Dundee conceded 71 goals this season, but on the flip side, they've scored 51 for a team at that end of the table. That's fantastic. 16 of those have came from joint top scorer Simon Murray. Stefan, I've been banging the Simon Murray drum for months now about getting on the Scotland team. You disagreed with me. He's just been nominated for PFA Player of the Year. What's your take? Are you still in the no Simon Murray for the friendlies camp?
No, absolutely not. Is it a great season? Okay, that's fine. I'm happy for him that he scored. Although he's top joint goal scorer, that's great. But nah, not for me. Like having a great season with Dundee, people can look at it two ways. They can say, well, Dundee for a team that don't score a lot of goals, scoring 51 goals, and he's been part of that. It is fair enough, but I just think Scotland have they're limited up front, but I just don't see them I'm fitting into the squad. I don't think, and maybe this is just like maybe this is just me, but even like Shea Adams and Lyndon Dykes and every other player that we've tried to force feed up top, Lauren Shankland, like better players have been up front for Scotland in the last few years and have struggled because most of the goals come from that man Scott McTominay or Ryan Christie or John McGinn or it seems to be like the midfielders that manage to get all the goals ahead of the strikers. I just think we've got better strikers in front of them. Based off of a one season, don't know. It wouldn't be for me if I was Steve Clarke. I personally wouldn't be looking at him, but I can see why people are shouting for him to be in the squad, but I just don't think so.
I think it'd be a, and it would be interesting to see. I think we could do worse where the options, as you listed there, they've not quite worked out. But then again, you would say they are better players, and so would I, to be perfectly honest. But it takes nothing away from Simon Murray. It's been an incredible season. His goal gives Dundee some much needed respite. They move 2 points clear of 11th and steer up even further away from 12th. I think the fear of automatic relegation has faded in recent weeks, but it's you can never get too far away from 12th when you're in the bottom half of the split. Speaking of that, though, Finlay Hearts travel to Ross County next week. Ross County currently can't buy a win. We'll get into that in a minute. But if Ross County win this game, there's Ross County sitting at 11th. That takes them within 2 points of Hearts. Obviously, there's other teams in between. Hearts, I think, are sitting in 8th. Hearts are suddenly in a relegation fight in May 2025. Like, how on earth has it came from guaranteed European football back-to-back seasons to almost playing in the championship again?
You would have to put it down to something at the kind of board level. Something is fundamentally wrong at that club. They should never have been in the championship. They should not be in the bottom six. Their decision making is strange. It's not like they're short on cash. They just keep getting it wrong. And I just wonder who is actually running the club. And this is maybe something to look into if they're actually football people. Rather than kind of fans who've turned into board members. But yeah, I think they will be fine. I see them getting points against Motherwell at home, and I see them beating St Johnstone at home, which should be enough. But yeah, if they were to finish as anything but the best team in the bottom six, that's a seriously bad season for them, given the way they tossed the Conference League. They really should have progressed. It's the way it's done is it's actually more difficult to not qualify for the next round than it is to qualify with the amount of teams that get to go through. Yeah, I don't really understand. And maybe this is something that Hearts fans can get involved with than just who runs the club because it's just baffled me every time.
The next appointment huge has been some reports today. I think actually John McGlynn of Falkirk, he's the bookies' favourite, and there's been some probably lazy reporting that Robbie Nielsen's in the running. He seems to just be Hearts manager every 2 years, takes a 2 year break, and then
Is he just
gets
waiting in a cabin in the countryside with a
his
really long beard, like
just
a
waiting.
retired Navy SEAL? And every time something goes wrong at Hearts, they go to his cabin and they ask him to come back for one last job.
They've got one speed dial,
Oh
just
my
waiting for them to fix
God.
the mess. If it's not him, it'll be Craig Levein.
Yeah.
It is bleak for Hearts. It's been a disappointing season, pretty much from start to finish. They've not even with Hibs had that poor period. They've excelled. Aberdeen have had peaks and troughs. For Hearts, it has been pretty much from the start of the season to now. They've really disappointed all expectations set of them, and with the squad they have, underperforming. Putting it lightly. I mentioned the travel to Ross County next week, and this podcast has got to travel to Ross County right now. Kilmarnock beat them 2-0 at Rugby Park. This is a more welcome performance for the Kelly fans, wasn't it, Stefan? They're another team that's not had much to sing about apart from almost getting into the conference league against Copenhagen. Apart from that, it's been a disappointing season for Kilmarnock as well, but a huge win.
It was a huge win. I think for me, Derek McInnes' side have been a little bit off the almost the beaten track in recent terms, in recent days, recent weeks rather. Getting that heavy win over Ross County almost ever so slightly alleviates any threats of them potentially falling into that drop zone. Obviously, they are 2 points off of it, but had Ross County won that, they would firmly have been in it. Do you know what I mean? I think they would firmly have been in it because Ross County would have been on 38 points, and Kelly would have been on 35. So it would have been a total role reverse. Got to give credit to Derek McInnes's side. They've not performed anywhere near the heights of last season. They've had a few scalps. This season, Kelly fans probably wanted and expected better, but I think the aim now for Kelly is not to go down. And I don't know, I've got a sneaky feeling that Derek McInnes might not be there next season. As for Ross County, they need to get out of that drop zone very quickly. Because if they come up against a Livingston or an Ayr in the playoffs, I don't know. I think I'd struggle to see them staying in it.
I agree with that. I think Ross County, if they finish 11th, they're the only team out of those in the bottom half that would be in serious trouble against like Ayr or even Partick Thistle. I don't know if he's watched Partick Thistle Falkirk the other night. Partick Thistle looked really good as well. I think they were fit a manager as well. But regardless of that, Ross County, I think, would struggle against those teams. Those teams in the Championship are set up really well. And Ross County just really, really struggling. They've not won in five. The last game they won, they equaled their points tally from last season. Finally, the way it's going, they're not going to surpass that point tally. They just look like a team who cannot buy a win, and every team who are playing them are going to be desperate for 3 points. So it's only going to get harder from here to the rest of the season, isn't it?
I get the feeling they've fallen out of form at exactly the wrong time. They were looking quite good before, and they surprised me a lot. Everyone thought they couldn't buy a win away, and then they sorted that, and then it was problems at home, and they sorted that. And then all of a sudden, they've just fallen off. They've gone off the boil a bit. I think that's was it 5 defeats in a row for them, one now post split. It's not looking very good. Hearts at home. And luckily, Ross, St. Johnstone away at their next two games. And if you were going to have anyone at their kind of next two opponents, it would be those two. But then Dundee away is a tough game, and Motherwell at home. I think they're too good for a championship team. They've actually got some quality in that side. And, fast forward a month or two, playoff fight, relegation playoffs, Ronan Hill will probably grab a hat trick against whoever comes up. It's just the way I see it going, and I'm not a mystic. But just, yeah, it's a difficult one because for all the improvement in performances, that squad is always going to be around there in the league. They Jordan Amisa has impressed me massively. If there were a team of the season, he'd definitely be, or maybe he'd be up, he'd be in a thereabouts for best keeper. But if you just look at the squad overall, it's not fantastic. And I expect them to be around the same place next year because there's not much that Doncowie can do unless some reinforcements come in. And if they can hang on to Ronan Hill and he can kind of be more consistent than he was this year, given that this was his first season, they could avoid this problem. But I don't know. These next two games are the ones where they should be aiming for the points.
Absolutely, because I think if they don't get any points from the next two games, I think if they get a win next week in the Dryhearts, that's one more team to put the pressure on. And then the week after that, St Johnstone, if you can't beat St Johnstone, with the greatest of respect to them, we're going to get into them in a minute. You deserve to be in trouble because they're 12th in the table. I say that with absolutely no hint of irony as a Celtic fan who just seen my team get beat away to St Johnstone a couple of weeks ago. But we'll start talking about St Johnstone right now. They felt another defeat, 3-2 defeat away to Motherwell. Mackenzie Kirk opened the scoring, this time it counted. It was such a shame to see that goal disallowed at Hampden. That was probably the best goal he'll ever score. But then just right before half time, it was two goals within a minute of each other. And if you watch the highlights, they're really similar type of goals. It's just a ball coming in across the box and an unmarked player taps it in. Finlay, I'm going to stick with you just now. You mentioned last week when we talked about St Johnstone's mentality against Celtic. Again, there's that going to be that question of commitment and mentality to concede and be able to switch off twice in the space of 60 seconds.
Yeah, that speaks volumes to the mental side of the game. Just, I can't understand that you're bottom of the league, you're winning, and to kind of let two goals in like that, it doesn't speak to a team that is fighting tooth and nail to stay up. They're just, I thought for whatever reason, far too comfortable with the position they're in. Yeah, just. There's something that needs to be questioned there about the commitment of the players and the buy-in that they have for Simo Valagari. And I would say Mackenzie Kirk is a funny one as well. You mentioned his goal. Mackenzie Kirk has been one of their best players as Kimpioke and Sidibe started to fall off. I thought they would be the best players. With Nicky Clark, I thought that would be a triangle that would do a lot of good for the side. But it's actually been Mackenzie Kirk who has come out and been one of their best players. And it's funny because he's kind of the opposite of the kind of striker that Valagari would have wanted eventually. He actually, I picture him playing for a Motherwell or something, and which he might do. I reckon if they go down, he'll probably get signed. He doesn't fit the style at all, and yet he is the one pulling them out of the mud, or at least trying to every time. But this, they are going down. If it wasn't obvious before, it definitely is now.
Yeah, no, I've got to agree. I've been saying that for a while as well, but you won't win any points for predicting St Johnstone to go down. Stefan, I'm going to switch to you. Look, you can't question the commitment and mentality that Motherwell side. They came back from behind and held on to their lead. I'm going to go off field for a bit. It's in kind of an inevitable. Lennon Miller probably going to get sold for the in this summer. Fees meant to be in the region of £6 million. We don't know if he's going down to England, down over Italy, Celtic or Rangers. How do you think Motherwell sensibly should reinvest this money? Because it's obviously not going to all go into the playing squad. Do you think it's best when a team gets a windfall like this? Is it going to go into the infrastructure? Is it going to go to the academy? We know Motherwell do a lot of things within their community as well. They're a really strong community club. How do you think Motherwell? How do you think they should, and how do you think they will reinvest the Lennon Miller money when it inevitably comes in this summer?
Well, they have to reinvest in the playing squad, but they equally have to reinvest in the infrastructure and the academy. It has to be split evenly, because that's the type of club Motherwell are. They're not going to just throw everything into the playing squad and reject or neglect their academy. If you look at Lennon Miller, he came from their academy. They've been shrewd, they've been smart, and Their operations in the last 10, 15 years. The infrastructure of the club has grown. You look at the park now, it used to be one of the worst in Scotland, now arguably one of the best. It's an absolute carpet to play on. I think the investment, reinvestment has to go into the club in general, and getting the right infrastructure, the right money into the academy, but also getting right players into the squad. And that's something for Motherwell that they've done quite, decently. They've brought in decent players. I mean, Andy Halliday was a shrewd signing for me, picking him up from Hearts. He's absolutely delivered. For Motherwell, it's about making sure they can still bring in players that are able to do that.
I'm a really big fan of that sort of signing and aging experience player. I think the experience they bring to squads is of paramount importance. Even when I play Football Manager, I know it's half the real deal, but I lean to that side in my transfer strategy when I'm trying to get a team promoted. But I'm going off on a tangent. I could have a separate podcast, a solo podcast, just talk about my Football Manager ventures. But Stefan, I'll stick with you because I was going to ask a question to both of you, but Finlay kind of answered it in his last point. St Johnstone, if Ross County do get a win against Hearts and St Johnstone lose, they've got Kilmarnock at home, it would all but relegate them. They would only be able to survive on goal difference, and the goal difference gap is not going to be able to be repaired in 3 games. We've talked about the quality of the Championship. Do you think St Johnstone have it in them to stay? Bounce straight back up next season. I don't want to talk about this prematurely, but it does. We are all quite unanimous in that they're going to go down.
I mean, I think I've been the only person for weeks that are still saying I think there's a hope, like there's a silver glimmer of hope for St Johnstone. But I after that defeat to Motherwell on Saturday, I've lost it, to be honest. Aleksi Mavalikari, but I think the die is cast on St Johnstone. I'm not gonna lie, I think they'll struggle to come bouncing right back up. Depends if they can keep hold of key players like Kirk. But I'd see him playing in the Premiership next season, so I don't think they'll be able to. I think they'll have to sell some players to reinvest it into the squad to try and get back up. But I think, once you fall down and through that trap door, Dundee United took them a little while to come back. I think the same applies to St Johnstone. I don't think we'll see them in the Premiership for maybe another 2 or 3 seasons.
I'll tell you what I think is going to happen. They are going to go down. They are going to stick because it would be too embarrassing to sack Seymour Vallecari after all the support they've given him. Things are not going to go their way. They'll be sitting maybe fifth with probably the highest budget in the league. And then they'll sack him, go in the complete opposite direction tactically, and then they'll shoot right back up the table because if you play a certain style and you have the most money in the championship, you go up. And I think that's what's going to happen. Much to the chagrin of the St. Johnstone board for their project.
Well, Finlay obviously has a crystal ball. If the viewers didn't know that,
Yeah,
he's
right here, am I
spoiled
right?
next season. But he's already. I just checked there. That's St Johnstone have been in the league since 2009, so they're part of the furniture, so they will be sorely missed, even though I would say the Perth is the worst away day in the league. I don't know if yous would agree with that. I don't want to be too harsh on them because I don't like visiting their ground, but do you have a particular favourite or least favourite ground to visit?
The obvious. No. No, I would I'd probably say least favourite ground. I was never a fan of McDermott Park. Been a couple of times. It's the middle of absolutely nowhere. It's horrendous to get to, so for that I'd be okay to see it go.
It's a
And
funny
then
stadium, isn't it? Yeah, I'll say the Easter Road has been very good to me. I think it's a nice stadium, and getting to see it with the rendition of Sunshine on Leith is, obviously it's the cliche song, but it was such a lovely moment. And I think it's just a really nice ground to be at. In terms of worst, just because I sit up in the stands for kind of media stuff, the Dundee Stadium, Dens Park, is such a nightmare because they have not pillars, these pylons that are keeping the roof up that are in your way. So you always have to ask the person next to you something like, what's happened. And on top of that, you can't see anyone in front of you because of the way it slants. So your view is terrible, and they don't tell you the time either. A lot of stadiums will tell you how much time has happened, like elapsed in the game, but you always have to have your phone on, and if you forget, then you have to keep an eye on someone else's timer to know just how much has been, like how long the game's been going on for. They do give a free pie and stuff, but most grounds do that. But yeah, I would say Dens Park only because they make my life more difficult than it needs to be after I've driven all the way there and back.
Seeing that you've mentioned about pies, I was gonna ask you what your favorite and least favorite pies are, but we're well done out of time. We'll talk about that next week.
That's a new,
So,
that's another episode that we're gonna
that's
do.
an episode in
The
its own.
summer series.
Well, that rounds us up for today's episode of Scottish Football Covered. I've been Mac. I've been joined by Stefan and Finlay. We'll be back with you next Monday at 4 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcast from. Don't forget, you can join in the conversation on Twitter at SFC Covered, and enjoy the rest of your week. Thanks for listening.